college number one. From the number one college town in the Big 12. Big 12. We're back with the Purple Project Podcast with Eddie Greer.
The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
Y'all know what time it is. The Purple Project Podcast is back on your airwaves. Episode 11. Eddie Greer III, host of the Purple Project Podcast, where we talk all about K-State athletics and what is happening around the community of Manhattan, Kansas. Welcome in, y'all, to another edition of Triple P. Before we get into tonight's episode, of course, the Purple Project Podcast, find it wherever you download your podcast from, wherever it's from. Audioboom, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. If you're listening, downloading us from there, please leave us a 5-star rating, of course. That helps us continue to spread out the Purple Project Podcast. Radio.com, iHeartRadio, and SoundCloud for the latest of the Purple Project Podcast. Of course, I live in Manhattan, Kansas, the Little Apple. And joining me on the other line, of course, my co-host from the state of California, San Diego, Alex Aiden, AA. I was just watching baseball just coming before putting this podcast on. What's going on, my man?
Not as much as going on, Eddie. I have finally gotten a haircut, so we can do an applause for it. Yes, thank you. The first episode, we talked about the haircut. Hadn't gotten my haircut yet. Finally got a cut today, so I got the fresh cut. Feeling much better, and I'm ready to rock. I'm ready to talk K-State sports with my fresh cut. After we do this, I'm going to get on the grill, you know, get my testosterone going, Eddie. You know, flip some burgers. That's the game plan. But I'm ready to talk K-State sports.
Oh, that is right. Before we do that, yeah, and actually, after this podcast, speaking of grilling, I'm going to eat dinner that I just cut, so.
There we go. Yeah, Look at us. Just two chefs, you know. Yep. Cooking our peeps some food, some good food.
Yep, good food, good times. Yes, baseball is back. The NBA is coming back later at the end of the month, so yeah, man, I'm pretty pumped up. That sports, man, is back. Go ahead, yeah.
You mentioned baseball, and you're at the inter-squad games that started, and so I've been watching some of those and even some of like the preseason type of games. But, man, next week is opening day for baseball, and I don't know about you, Eddie, but I am so eager to finally be able to watch Major League Baseball starting next week.
Oh, yeah.
Which will be the week that people are listening to this. In fact, when people listen, baseball will be 2 days away from the first two games. So, beautiful. Beautiful thing.
Yep, that is correct. When this thing goes up on Tuesday morning, yep, we'll be getting ready for baseball indeed. So, Labor Day, of course, here in Manhattan. Governor Kelly issued a statewide changing of schools, obviously. I have friends with kids. And I don't understand why some of those parents are upset, but Labor Day, after Labor Day weekend, school will start. That includes K-State. So, that will be, I mean, usually school starts a couple weeks before Labor Day weekend, and then 2 weeks, and then bam, you have your 3-day weekend, and then you're back at it again. This makes total sense. I mean, some of the parents out there probably don't agree with it, but the times they are living in, especially with the dread word of the COVID, it's the right decision. Especially, you know, K-State's anxious to getting students back. That's the plan this entire time, getting the students back. And we've talked about it on the podcast. You know, what if the student gets tested for COVID? So I'm still, you know, trying, still spectacle of the whole thing. But, you know, we'll see. But this is the right move for all schools involved.
Yeah, you know, I think you agree. I think I agree with that. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned the Labor Day. You know, I always hear, you know, hey, back in the day, you know, school always started after Labor Day and got out before Memorial Day back in my day. You know, I've heard multiple people say that to me through my life because it seems like school gets pushed up every single year when it starts and then pushed back when it ends. But, I'm with you, Eddie. I don't think that you can argue the decisions that were made. This is obviously becoming a very hot topic right now across the entire country because it's such a complicated topic because there's so many layers to it. I can't tell you how many times I've said layers on this show, but there are so many layers to this, like everything else with the coronavirus. And you've got to find a way to balance having kids in school, having students on campus, at college, or with the opportunity at least, and at the same time preserving the health and safety aspect. You and I have talked about this multiple times. You've got to balance the health and safety to the other side of it, and you've got to find that right balance. And I think that, you know, I don't know if there's any perfect answer to the right thing to do, but I think this is a good blueprint to go by. And I think that the other thing that's important to note that I've brought up, and it's the same thing with sports. You know, schools are going to, a majority of schools are going to be opening up in some way, shape, or form across the country, including Kansas, obviously, after Labor Day. And there's going to be positive tests, just like sports. There's positive tests. There's going to be positive tests in schools, too. You can't, this is just my opinion, I don't believe you can shut down the schools after a positive test and be like,
right, yeah.
We got to shut the school down, and we got to do this for 2 weeks. You know, I think that a positive test is inevitable, and you just got to find a way to minimize it and not allow for the outbreaks and allow for those types of things. So I hope that we don't see that knee-jerk reaction to where when there's a positive test, because there will be a positive test in Kansas schools and schools across the country, that people don't decide, governors and school districts don't decide, well, we just got to shut it all down now. We got to shut it all down. You know, if there's an outbreak, of course, yeah, if there's an outbreak in a school, Eddie, if, I don't have a problem with that. If there's an outbreak on the universities, at K-State, I don't have a problem with them shutting the university down for 2 weeks if there's an outbreak. But if three K-State students have saw it positive, you know, you shouldn't be shutting down the university of over 20,000 students. So, you know, I think that that's going to be interesting to kind of see how that's handled. But I think there's a good blueprint in place for the schools to go on. And, you know, this is something that will continue to evolve as the days and the weeks and the months go by.
Yes, and so we'll definitely keep an eye on this as it gets closer. But, yeah, for sure, that's been kind of the big story as far as the community goes. Here in Manhattan, Kansas, K-State, starting school right after Labor Day weekend. And, all right, so K-State sports. All right, here we go. So, I'm currently on 27 Sports, and we just talked about it. And this wasn't on the show sheet, well, not show sheet, but the list that I sent you. But we're going to talk about this right now. Big 12 preseason rankings came out yesterday. And yeah, I definitely do not agree with where K-State is. And then remember, K-State last year with first year head coach Chris Klieman was, I believe, preseason ranked 8th or 9th. I want to say 8th.
It was 9th.
9th, okay, yeah. So
9th place, yeah, they're picked 9th.
They're picked almost dead last in the league. And where they ended up, they finished top half of the league last year, of course, going to the Liberty Bowl, where we know what happened there, but obviously the bowl, we got screwed from going to a bigger bowl. So now, K-State picked up on the screwed part, I guess, right back where he left off here. Picked 7th in the league, 7-5, 4-5, predicted. I'm reading
24/7 Sports right now. And obviously, behind, and this is going up from where K-State is to where Oklahoma is. Oh, it's OU, number one, blah, blah, blah. All right, so and behind, look where K-State is. TCU, 6, with Gary Patterson kind of declining a little bit. Baylor, with a new head coach. Baylor, new head coach, Matt Rule going to the NFL, to the coaching the Carolina Panthers. Baylor, 5. You go up Iowa State, the overrated Iowa State Cyclones, 4th, right? And then Texas Longhorns, they ain't back yet, in my opinion, still, 3rd. Preseason ranking. Then you have OSU. Of course, they have their big 3 back. Number 2, which I could see that. And then, obviously, the number 1 Oklahoma Sooners, which we beat right here. Manhattan, Kansas last year. Upset Oklahoma last year. Preseason rank number 1. Everyone else behind us don't matter. But 7th, Alex, in the league. I don't like this.
You know what, Eddie? Quickly going through, I started thinking back on a few K-State football predictions once I saw this poll. And the first thing I thought about was obviously the Colin Klein's junior and senior year with K-State, his junior year, which was his first year as the full-time starter. He played a little bit the year prior to that, but this was his first year as a full-time starter. K-State was picked 8th. And they finished 2nd, and they went to the Cotton Bowl. Yep. And then the year, and that was 2011, and then the year after that, 2012, you would think that K-State finishing 2nd in the Cotton Bowl, with everybody coming back, would, you know, it'd give you incentive to put K-State higher up, but no, they were still picked 6th somehow in the Big 12 rankings the next year. We know what happened. They ended up going 11-1, and they were ranked number 1 in the country at one point. They won the Big 12, they went to the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl and lost to Oregon. Mm-hmm. So, clearly incorrect with that. Last year, Chris Klieman coming in, K-State picks finished 9th. They finished 4th, or tied for 4th. And that clearly was obliterated. And we know under the Bill Snyder, there were many times the K-State was picked in the bottom half, and they finished in the top half. So it just seems like an annual tradition. And Kellis Robinette, he actually tweeted before the polls came out. He said, the Big 12 is going to announce its preseason poll this afternoon. Please prepare your best disrespect tweets accordingly. So clearly he was preparing for a poll that was not going to be favorable to K-State, and that's what we got. So I got to say, Eddie, I agree with the top and the bottom of the poll. My issue is with the middle of it. So I think Oklahoma's going to win the Big 12. I don't even think there's I don't even know how much of a competition they'll have, to be 100% honest. Or that number 1 spot. I think they're going to get number 1. I think Oklahoma State at number 2 makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
With their big 3 coming back, and Chubba Hubbard, and, you know, as coming back as well. And they may be able to push Oklahoma a little bit, but I still don't think they can push them to the limit. I think Oklahoma, people can say, you know, say whatever they want about Oklahoma, and, you know, they can't play well in the playoff, yada, yada, yada. Well, I still think that they're going to be in contention for the college football playoff this year. You look at Texas at 3, that's one of the things. Anywhere, every year you look at a roster and you're like, well, yeah, I mean, Texas should be. You know, look at the roster, they should absolutely finish in the top, 2 or 3 in the Big 12, but they never knew. So who knows? Who knows if they will or not? Iowa State at 4. You know, once again, this is the same type of deal. You look at Iowa State's roster, and you're like, yeah, you know, that's a roster that should finish top 4. But they never do better than 7-5. They're kings of 7-5 seasons. They'll probably go 7-5, 5-4 to the Big 12, and that's probably what they'll do. So, you know, it just seems like that's what happens with every year. So, I mean, yeah, 4 might be accurate for them. The biggest issues I have are obviously 5, 6, and 7. You know, Baylor at 5, TCU at 6, K-State at 7. Starting out with Baylor, yes, they had a great year last year. They went 11-2. They were great under Matt Rhule, and they do have some pieces coming back from last year's team. That is all true, and that's all great, and I'm sure that's what the people were voting with thought. But when you look at what's going on with the coronavirus and new coaches and new coaching staff and all the turnover and all those different things, plus they did still lose some key players from last year's team, I have a really hard time, Eddie, picturing them finishing top half of the Big 12. It's really, really hard for me with a new coaching staff who hasn't been able to really do much of anything with the players. It's just hard to see them finishing top half to me. And then I look at TCU, and TCU lost a ton of players to the pros this last year. Yes, they are expected to have better quarterback play. I get that. And quarterback is obviously where it starts, and Gary Patterson's a good coach. But, you know, they lost a lot of pieces, and they lost a lot of pieces on a team last year that K-State finished ahead of. And K-State has more players coming back. So why would I think that TCU is going to finish ahead of K-State? You know, why would I think Baylor is going to finish ahead of K-State when you factor in everybody who K-State has coming back? K-State has a senior quarterback, which is one of the biggest things that I can't wrap my head around, is that they put some of these teams ahead with Skylar Thompson coming back as a senior. And Chris Kleiman clearly proved, his worth last year. K-State doesn't have practically any turnover from the coaches to the team. And so it's hard for me to figure out where they think that team that finished tied for fourth with nearly everything coming back and the continuity of COVID, how important continuity is going to be because of COVID. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense why they would be seventh. Now, it does make sense because K-State always ends up in the bottom half somehow, but it doesn't just doesn't make much sense to me that Baylor and TCU are ahead of K-State. You know, Iowa State, you know, K-State was five. I wouldn't have much of a gripe. Personally, I would put K-State ahead of Iowa State too, because Iowa State did lose some players as well. And you know what? Until Iowa State can beat K-State on a consistent basis, I'm not putting Iowa State ahead of K-State. K-State beats Iowa State almost every year. I'm not putting Iowa State ahead of K-State until they can prove that they can beat K-State on a consistent basis. So, for me, I think it should go K-State 4, Iowa State 5, and then maybe Baylor 6, TCU 7. But, you know, whatever. You know, same old thing. 8 through 10, I don't have an issue with. I think West Virginia 8, Tech 9, KU 10. I think that sounds right. I think those three will be in the bottom three. I think Oklahoma State, and Texas will probably be in the top three. But Texas may find some way to do what Texas does and not finish in the top three, because they find a way to do that many years. So, it's very interesting to see. But my issues are with the middle, and I cannot figure out the Baylor and the TCU. Those are the hardest, and obviously K-State. I don't know how they're at seven. So whatever, Eddie. Now we'll just have to. You know, it'll be another year where K-State will come out, and I fully anticipate they'll finish ahead of seventh, and they'll, you know, prove everybody wrong again. And then at the end of the year, we'll hear, oh man, you know, this K-State team. What a great story. What a great comeback story. And we'll be sitting there thinking, no, it's no type of story, because this is what we knew we had the whole time. So it was the same thing when K-State made their national title run sophomore year. Everyone's like, what a great story. You know, and how about this K-State team? You know, it's coming from nowhere to do this. No, they didn't come from nowhere. They played the Cotton Bowl last year. They won 10 games. Everyone's coming back. It's not a surprise to any of us. We all expected it. You know, I think that this year we expect this K-State team, if there are 12 games played, I think we expect them to win anywhere from 7 to 9 games. And I think that most K-State fans I've talked to believe that they'll fall somewhere in that range if things go as planned. And then if in the conference, I think people are thinking, you know, that they'll finish anywhere from the, 4-5 if things maybe broke bad for K-State, to 6-3 or 7-2 if things broke good. So, it's just hard for me to kind of figure it out. But, hey, you know, we'll play the season out. We'll prove them wrong. I'd much rather be K-State and be picked in the bottom half and prove people wrong in a good way, rather than be Texas, where I'm at the top, and then I get to prove people wrong by finishing worse than I was predicted. So I'll take it. I'll take that over Texas's scenario. But you know, another year of the K-State and the Big 12 preseason poll being wildly inaccurate, which is something that is pretty common in football and basketball, seems like, in the Big 12 nowadays. So you know, whatever, Eddie. It's, you know, Casey, it'll prove him wrong.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yeah, I'd rather be picked in the bottom of any conference and then prove everyone wrong instead of being that team where you're picked to finish either first or second and fail people's expectations. So I definitely agree with you on that. I mean, it's hard for me right now to look at rosters right now because they haven't come out. Besides, we know what K-State is. I mean, Oklahoma State, I mentioned it a while ago on this podcast. We got the Big Three coming back. I think they can challenge OU. Now it's hard. Again, they lost Jalen Hurts and CeeDee Lamb and a couple of the defenders over there down in Norman. But I think, yes, they have the Mike Gundy, who's been over there for a long, long time. For OSU, Spencer Sanders, the quarterback, Chuba Hubbard, and Tylan Wallace, the big three of OSU. I think they can possibly challenge OU for the number one spot, of course. So, but yeah, the middle is up for debate there. And Texas, you don't know what you're going to get out of them. So Iowa State, you said it, Alex, we beat them except for the last game of Bill Snyder's career here at K-State. We should have won that game. I still don't know how in the world we lost that game, but
that's a head scratcher, man.
Yeah, that's still to this day the head scratcher, but we beat them here last year. We'll see. TCU, you mentioned them, they lost quite a bit of talent, and they seem to be declining in the last couple of years under Gary Patterson. And you mentioned West Virginia. We should have beat West Virginia here at home, in our house, last year. I still don't know how we lost to them with the whole Cats uniform debacle. And then KU and Texas Tech. Yeah, so, yeah, we'll see. I mean, but yeah, K-State picked seventh there, so we'll find out here, obviously, when it starts. We don't know yet, but we'll see we talked about it on the last episode a little bit, the Big 10 and the Pac-12 going to conference schedule only and losing out on the out-of-conference rivalries, really, when you look at it, for those guys, maybe for the exception of Ohio State, Michigan. Now I'm going off a little bit of a tangent, a little bit, Alex. But yeah, you're talking about USC. They play big time out of conference opponents, and some of the Big Ten opponents also play out of conference opponents too. So that's money lost in itself, right there. But yeah, once this college football season gets going, whenever it starts, yeah, and the Big 12 has not announced officially yet if they're going to play the full 12 games or just going to go to the conference schedule. We've had this discussion, Alex. So, yeah, I mean, things are warming up. We talked about Major League Baseball coming beginning next week. NBA about to resume their season. NHL about to start as well. So, things are heating up. So, it's just a matter of when college football is going to start. And, oh, yeah, training camp is beginning next week in the NFL, too. So,
it is. And you know, Eddie, I've had a chance to think about the non-conference situation a little more this past week. And the more I think about it, the less it makes sense, to be 100% honest with you. And I kind of echoed this a little bit last episode, but I feel stronger about it now than I did a week ago, because I get it from the Pac-12's perspective, because there are so many hotspots in Arizona and California right now. And you've got USC, UCLA, Arizona, and Arizona State. That's four schools in the Pac-12 that are impacted by some big hotspots. So I understand them saying, okay, we might want to limit games for those schools because they're some of their biggest schools are in areas that are just getting really just pounded with the coronavirus right now. So I do understand that. To a degree. you know, I don't understand. And by the way, you're right. You're missing out on some big non-con games. Ohio State was also just playing Oregon, and that was going to be a really good non-con game as well. But,
yes, sir.
But the it doesn't make sense, the thought to me, of canceling all the non-con games. Because what, you and I talked about this a little bit the last episode, but what does it really change except take three games away? I mean, what's the difference of K-State playing North Dakota than K-State playing West Virginia? I don't see the difference. All you're doing with it is reducing the number of games that the Big 12 has and that K-State has. And I don't think you want to reduce football games if you don't have to. It's kind of like, you know, I've heard this bounce right, Eddie. Hey, you know, it's a school district. Let's go to school 2 days a week. And it's like, why would you just do it or not do it? Like, what's the point of doing it like 1 foot in, 1 foot out? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't understand how that makes things safer, K-State playing 9 games instead of 12 games. Now, I understand if Buffalo's like, hey, you know, New York is spiked back up and, you know, there's a, you know, this is a big hot spot. So, K-State's like, okay, yeah, we don't want to play them because they're in a spot that's a hot spot. You know, that makes sense. But just to say we're not playing non-con, it doesn't make sense to me because I don't understand how that's any more dangerous than K-State playing their 9 Big 12 games. And if you're going to play the 9 Big 12 games, you may as well play all the games. So this is something that is kind of doesn't make sense to me, Eddie, the more I think about it, especially when you think of the Big Ten, which is in an area that isn't seeing the hot spots like the South is. You know, they're not seeing the hot spots that California is seeing, that Arizona is seeing, that Florida is seeing, Georgia is seeing. You know, they're not seeing, you know, it's not that, they're not seeing what the Pac-12 is seeing, essentially, to put it that way, and even the SEC. So, it just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense to me. Maybe I'm missing something, Eddie. I could be. But it just doesn't make sense to me. I don't see the benefit of taking the non-con away. I don't see what benefit it is. It gives you 3 more weeks to prepare. But haven't they had plenty of time to try to prepare for this? I mean, this thing's been around since the early spring. So, I don't know. I'm just a little perplexed on that.
Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, the Purple Project Podcast here on this Saturday night, July 18th, 2020, and we're talking always about K-State athletics, as usual. But yeah, now that you talk about it, that's an interesting perspective. Yeah, I mean, a couple episodes ago, we talked about, I mean, it came down to it, agreeing to play. It wouldn't be bad to play a conference schedule only, but yeah, when you look at it, with K-State, relatively, you got Vanderbilt coming to Manhattan, and we talked about this a lot so far on this podcast. That Vanderbilt, SEC school, yes, they're not very good, but still, that's a big-time program coming to your town. That brings in money and things like that. So, I'm just scrolling down here. I just hopped on while you were talking. Some of these conference games that supposed to be taking place, right? So, all right, so I'm just going to run it down for you. So, Miami, Michigan State, TCU, supposed to be playing Cal. Memphis, playing at Purdue. West Virginia, good old West Virginia, got to go down to Florida State. Woo! Baylor, they got to go to Ole Miss down here. Cincinnati, Nebraska. Appalachian State, who's known to wreck big programs. Haha, Michigan, Wisconsin, Florida State, Boise State, So, Virginia, Georgia, North Dakota State, who's known for taking down big opponents.
Oh, yeah.
AKA Chris Klieman. Yeah. Oregon, North Carolina at UCF. Woo! Penn State, Virginia Tech, Auburn, North Carolina, Michigan, Washington. That's supposed to be a good game. Wisconsin, Notre Dame. And this affects really Notre Dame in all likelihood anyways. Tennessee.
That's a whole other discussion, Eddie. Notre Dame, who are they going to play?
Yeah, they're not even in the conference.
How are they going to play football? I mean, they're not aligned with the conference. I mean, maybe the ACC would lump them in because they play basketball with them, but I think Notre Dame could get hung out too dry if everybody does somebody put their donk on. And can you imagine college football with no Notre Dame?
Oh my goodness.
No Navy. No Navy. Navy's got a good football team. They may not be able to play football either.
Yeah. My wife was always talking about every time we turn on to watch Notre Dame with K-State or none of her teams ain't on, the fact that why is Notre Dame not in a conference? They should be in a conference somewhere. They're always playing Pac-12 teams or this team, you know. I mean, she makes a good point. I mean, Notre Dame, the schedule all these points, they're going to be screwed if they may
rethink their whole independent thing after this season if they don't end up being able to play football. They may be like, well, you know what, fine. We'll find a conference to join if we're going to miss out on playing a football season. Which, we talked about how much K-State would lose from a football season. Can you imagine how much Notre Dame would lose from a football season? Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine how much money they'd lose.
Yeah, and just to finish up the list here that I'm reading off, Oklahoma got to host Tennessee in the second week of September. Again, there's Notre Dame. Clemson, the defending champions, got to go to Notre Dame. Woo! USC was supposed to go to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, the first week of September in a rematch.
Good one, too.
Yeah. I'm telling you, all these are good, man. Texas, the rematch, going to Baton Rouge, where no Joe Burrow. They lost a ton of talent. That's going to be an interesting game, man. Can Sam Ellinger get the redemption? That's supposed to be that. Ooh, that's must-see TV right there.
And this is so depressing, Eddie, because there's so many good games in the non-con that we may not see. Now, I guess it is important for us to bring up that the SEC, the Big 12, and the ACC have not made decisions yet, so we still might be able to see some of it if they keep it. You know, we maybe we do still get to see the LSU and the Texas matchup. Maybe we do get to see you know, some of these other hot matchups. So fingers crossed. But man, you were naming off some good games. You know, I tell you what, USC and going to Tuscaloosa. Now it would have been good. And, oh my gosh, Clemson! Which the Clemson Notre Dame game still can happen, but oh my gosh, can you imagine Clemson going to Notre Dame?
Oh man, I can't imagine that. But obviously,
what an atmosphere that would be.
That will be
it. I guess there won't be an atmosphere because there won't be a crowd.
Yeah, I was just about to say. There ain't going to be no fans out there.
That's true. There won't be. No, right.
Unless you pump in crowd noise like Major League Baseball is doing.
That's true.
And the number one game that's on Yahoo Sports, which I'm reading off its matchups, September 12th, Ohio State, which you were just referring to, Alex. Yeah. He's going to go to Oregon, and yeah, so all these games are hot.
Good ones.
Yeah, so that's just the tip of the iceberg right there. Again, we'll see what happens. Again, like we discussed here tonight on the Purple Project Podcast, but Bowlesby has not made a full official decision on whether they're, at least for the Big 12's concern, for the K-State fans that listen to this podcast, of course, here in Manhattan, Kansas, or wherever you're a K-State fan in America, that either we play a conference schedule or we're going to play a whole 12 games. And your theory, Alex, it does, for me, now that you talked about that, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, obviously, the Major League Baseball can't play a full 162 games, unfortunately, due to this whole damn COVID thing. But, you know, 60 games, at least you're getting that. Here, college football and the NFL, they've had plenty of time, and they still do have plenty of time to figure this stuff out. I mean, I've listened to podcasts that, oh, there's not going to be a college football season. I don't know how football is going to do with all this contact sport and all that other stuff, but, you know, they've had a lot of time to digest it, observe other sports, NASCAR, Major League Baseball starting back up here, like we've referred to a lot here tonight. So, I mean, they got their hands full. College football and NFL.
I will quickly say this. I do understand you know, the thought of, okay, well, maybe we shorten a season, it gives us a better chance to be able to get our season in. Or maybe we do non-conference and then there's an outbreak and we can't even get to conference play, so we want to reduce that and see if we can, you know, get as far as we can into the season, so let's shorten the season, let's play the conference and get as far as we can get. I do somewhat get it from that perspective, and I also do get the perspective of, well, you know, let's sit back and let's wait and see if the numbers go down, and then, you know, we can play football at a safer perspective because the numbers are too high right now, and, you know, we don't feel it, you know, it'll be safe at this particular time. So, I mean, I get that argument as well, but it still in my head it loops back to, you know what, if you're going to do it, let's just do it, you know, and let's not try to, you know, it's for me, it just like I said, it feels like the equivalent of going to school or going to work 2 to 3 days a week. You know, it doesn't make sense. You know, if you're going to do it, send your kids to school 5 days a week. If you're going to do it, go to work 5 days a week, or don't do it at all. I mean, you know, either you're going to go and you're going to get exposed. It's going to happen. And, you know, I get that. I get those aspects they're talking about, and I especially get it with the Pac-12. And I don't fault them because of the outbreaks that they've seen, but, and you have to make these decisions early so you can plan around it. I also understand that. But, you know, it's just, like I said, I just get this kind of feel of, well, we're half in and we're half out. And I feel like if they want to play football, they got to either be all in or they got to say, you know what, we're not going to be able to get football and they just got to be all out. You know, I don't feel like that they can be anywhere in between, because I feel like if they get caught in between, we're going to get a couple games into a season and then that's going to be that and then the plug's going to get pulled.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Eddie Greer III, Alex Aiden, a couple K-State grads, / Wildcat 91.9 alums. This is the Purple Project Podcast. Yeah, and there was a speculation or a suggestion that I know he didn't like it when he said it, but there was a suggestion that, okay, let's just play 5 games in the fall and 5 games in the springtime. And immediately, that did not make any kind of, and he agreed, but that didn't make any sense. I mean, you're going to start the season in the fall, just go ahead and complete it. You know what I'm saying? Instead of, that would divide fans, because you do that, let's just roll with this. If you do that, then you have potential of losing. I don't think this is the right words, but maybe you can explain it a little better. But losing focus for fans, and because you have basketball that's going play through the, well, supposed to start in the fall, late fall, to going into the springtime. You got baseball in there, so it doesn't make any sense. And for that, and then what if you have graduates, seniors on the K-State squad that graduate in the fall? It does not, that are critical to your football team.
The problem with that is too, that the NFL has been vocal that they're not moving the draft back, they're not moving any of that type of stuff back, and if you have games in the spring, you're going to have players that are going to have to make the decision, well, do I go through the draft process, or do I, you know, play the second half of my college year? Well, you know what the answer is going to be. They're going to take the draft process. And so you're not going to be having the same type of talent level, if that makes sense, on the field in the spring, most likely, because the NFL prospects won't be playing. So, you know, you got to realize that as well. Or, you know, maybe a player does play, but then you put their NFL career in jeopardy. You know, I just don't know. It's really a complicated deal. And just to loop back quickly with the game, I'm not saying, you know, let's be irresponsible about how we do this. Health and safety of the players is absolutely the most important thing through this process. Not denying that at all. And if you can't play football safely, then no, we shouldn't play football. I'm a football advocate, and I am a diehard, and I absolutely want to see football. But if you don't think you can play it safely, just don't play it. You know, I don't understand the, you know, let's kind of just tap, you know, just kind of tap dance around it and then just, you know, dabble her foot in the water here and dabble her foot in the water there. I mean, you know, I just feel like you either got to jump in or decide not to jump in, you know? And, you know, I just, and like I said, you know, if you think players are going to, if it's not going to be, if you think it's not going to be safe for them, if you don't think you can do it a safe way, then you know what? Let's work on finding an alternative solution that does not include fall ball. And if you don't think there's an alternative solution that can work, then, you know, maybe we shouldn't have college football. We should, Eddie. I want college football. But you know, some football is better than no football, and I get that too. But you know, it also what it boils down to, Eddie, is it's a tricky conversation. You know, I don't know if there's a right answer to it. I didn't mean to open up Pandora's box bringing up the non-conference thing, but you know, it's an interesting topic. It really is.
It definitely is. So again, we'll keep track of this situation of the non-con. We'll find out. We'll hope to find out here soon. That's at some point. So yeah, K-State fans, you're listening to the Purple Project Podcast, EG3AA in the building, recording on this Saturday night. It's been hot here in Manhattan, Kansas.
That's right.
So, and the action in sports is picking up, and I like that as well as we've talked about here so far in this episode. So now switching gears, K-State back to football. The preseason team came out a few days ago, and we have three guys on that list. We've talked about White Hubert a bunch. Heroes Pro Project Podcast. We love him. And there's two more others that joined him on that list. Nick Lenners, the fullback for K-State, and Mr. All-American on the specialist who returned three kick returns back for touchdowns last year, the electrifying Joshua Youngblood, Alex.
You know, John, we talk about him a lot on here. But He tweeted the perfect thing. He said, "There's nothing more K-State than K-State having a all Big 12 preseason fullback and kick returner on their list." He said, "There's just nothing more K-State." Of course, K-State would have the kick returner and the fullback on the all preseason Big 12 team. I mean, that's the most K-State thing ever. It really is. you know, obviously, I think Joshua Youngblood, of course he deserves that honor. Like you mentioned, three returns last year. That's tremendous, you know. He's an amazing returner, very explosive. And I think he's the most feared in the Big 12. I think so I think that's great for him. You know, Nick Lenners, at fullback, you know, I never really thought about him making Big 12.
Exactly.
You know, it never really crossed my mind that he would even get it. But hey, you know what? When you think about it, it makes sense because he's, we talk about Gene Taylor like this before, but he's kind of one of those, you know, put your hard hat, get your lunch pail, and go to work type guys, and you know, gets the job done. And so, you know, he deserves those honors. Obviously, the flashy one is Wyatt Hubert. You know, obviously, he deserves to be on the preseason All Big 12 team. And, you know, with what he did last year on the defensive line, you know, you gotta put him there. Mm-hmm. So you know, he continues to rack up his preseason accolades, which he deserves. And you know, Nick Lenners, good for him. Good for him to make that list. Joshua Youngblood as well, he's obviously very deserving as well. So I think it's a really good list for K-State. I think the players are deserving of it. And, you know, I think it's a good example that, yeah, well, K-State might have been picked 7th in the Big 12 poll. There are still athletes that are getting the recognition that they deserve. And I think that's good for K-State to have three players named to the preseason All Big 12 team.
Yeah, Nick Lenners, yeah, you took my words out of my mouth, Alex, with Nick Lenners, yeah. But with K-State and how they run their offense, they want to incorporate the fullback, the tight ends. Yeah. Lenners played in 13 games a season ago. Well, he started 4 of them while getting 13 catches for 163 yards with a touchdown. That was the most catches by a Wildcat fullback or a tight end going back to 2014. And then Yeah, so he's from Nebraska. So, yeah, and you're looking at the Leonards also, who's part of that rushing attack. Also, he's the fullback that, of course, did a great job for the trio of, we'll talk about Harry Trotter here later, here in a bit. James Gilbert, Jordan Brown, Irving, Jocadia Wright, and that bunch there. And K-State's rushing attack was third in the league with 29 rushing touchdowns. So, yeah, it definitely does make a lot of sense to put him there. He deserves it, and he's going to be blocking for Harriet Trotter again, Irving, and Jocadia Wright again here this upcoming football season as well. And then we already know what Wyatt Hubert does. We talked about him. Y'all know him. We don't need to say any more about him on the show. Or we'll still talk about him, but we don't need to say any more about his stats. But transitioning to the Mr. Youngblood here, the 2019 Big 12 Special Teams Player of the Year Award, All-American, obviously, and he did it all last year. Led the nation with three kickoffs for a freshman for a touchdown. We heard a lot about him in the offseason last year, how good this guy was from Chris Kleiman and them, and he showed it on the field. And Youngblood, the average, 35, almost 36 yards per kickoff return. And you heard a couple coaches talk about, well, he needs to get more involved in the pass game. That was my thought exactly, especially last year. I thought he should have been more involved in the offense. I mean, this is another weapon that K-State, Skylar Thompson, and Courtney Messingham, offense coordinator for K-State, should get involved a lot more in the offense, especially this year. I mean, he's a dangerous weapon. Yeah, you have Malik Knowles and Joaquin Gill, and you got the running backs back. You have Nick Leonard's back. Obviously, we'll talk about the offensive line coming up in the upcoming episodes of the Purple Project Podcast, but this is a lethal weapon, not to reference a movie reference, but
yeah.
This is an absolute weapon that you have to get more involved. And he can be that guy that can obviously change the game.
Absolutely. And I think that you will see him get more involved this year, if we have a season. But I think you're right. He's a guy that I'm not surprised that he wasn't a huge part of the offense. He was obviously a part of the offense last year, but as you mentioned, he wasn't a huge part of the offense yet. And, he was a freshman, so I understood that. Ease him in, get him comfortable, put him in positions where he will succeed, and then increase that workload in, 2020, his sophomore campaign. You look at Malik Knowles, he was a freshman as well, but we all know that he still played four games in the season prior, and then was still able to take advantage of the redshirt rule, and he was still able to redshirt and then come in as a redshirt freshman last year. So he still had some games under his belt. He had some experience, so he was able to kind of take that that step, which led to an increase in playing time for him, where Josh B. Youngblood may have not had that same type of opportunity. So it's I think that this year, what you'll see, and you mentioned Joaquin Gill. That's a good three wide receiver set right there. When you look at you put Joshua Youngblood and Malik Knowles, possibly on the boundaries, and maybe Joaquin Gill on the in the slot. The other thing is, I think you can move those receivers around. You can put them in multiple positions, which can make them even more difficult to defend. Heck, if you wanted to get funky enough, Eddie, you've got the speed that Malik Knowles and Joshua Youngblood have. You can have some stuff where you motion them into the backfield. You have them line up behind Skyler. There's a lot of different things you can do that are really going to scare defenses, because what scares defenses more than anything, Eddie, is speed. And K-State has two of the fastest receivers in the Big 12 on their team, and Malik Knowles and Josh B. Youngblood. So, obviously with K-State, you want to increase Youngblood's, increase his snap count, I guess you could say, in the offense, and increase his workload And if you do that, I think that you can really make the K-State offense hard to defend because, you know, teams are going to be scared of that speed. And if you can, like I said, you compare consistently the Youngblood and Knowles speed opposite side each other, and then you get that K-State running duo going with Irvin and Wright and Trotter and that group. And then all of a sudden you mix in Skylar's ability to make plays. You know, you've got something there that can be really, really can create headaches for defenses and defense coordinators. And I really think Josh Youngblood is that piece that's going to make it go, because when you get that second receiver with that amount of speed, it makes things so much harder to defend. It's kind of like, people probably get sick of me referring back to the Chiefs, but the Chiefs aren't the same offense when Sammy Watkins isn't on the field. But people are like, oh, you know, well, Sammy Watkins is hurt all the time. You know, well, what type of impact does he really have? Well, defenses have to defend the Chiefs totally different when Sammy Watkins isn't on the field, because they don't have two receivers that can just beat them deep on each side, and Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins. Now, it's a little different now that they drafted Mecole Hardman, and they have him with the speed. So that does change things a little bit. This was more the first year of Sammy Watkins before Mecole Hardman got on. But before he was there, you could defend the Chiefs differently because you didn't have to worry about that. Those two guys beating you down the field, you could key in on the other receiver more and be able to slow the offense down. So last year, teams may have been able to key in more on Malik Knowles when he was on the field, because Youngblood wasn't on the field as much. Or when Malik Knowles was hurt, teams could key in on Youngblood and make sure he didn't beat them deep. You know, it's a lot easier for them to do that. And sometimes that kind of handicapped what K-State could do offensively, because then they could load the box up on K-State and stop the run. And which K-State is their bread and butter under Chris Klieman. So when you get two guys with speed, the teams have to respect the speed, it'll pull guys out of the box, and then it gives K-State lighter boxes that they can run on with that running group. And then, if teams try to load that box up, then you got two guys that can burn them deep as long as Skylar can get them the ball. So that's what, as long as you give them the ball,
yeah.
Exactly. As long as you can get the ball there, Eddie, then that's what matters. But that's what having two guys with speed on the offense does. So more than anything, being able to insert Joshua Youngblood's speed out there with Malik Knowles' speed, I think that's a game changer for the offense. So absolutely want to see him integrated, and he's a playmaker. You know, on top of that, you can get, you know, Youngblood, Knowles on slants, on crossers, on some bubble screens, and they can break those things open just like that, you know. So defense is just going to have to defend them a lot differently this year if you can have Malik Knowles and Joshua Youngblood on the field consistently. And I think it will make everything just work better, and everything will work more like a well-oiled machine. You won't see that offense that kind of would freeze and kind of get stuck, and then they would go into a big drought here and a big drought there. You saw that kind of last year because Malik Knowles was hurt and K-State still wasn't playing Youngblood a ton on offense. So, you know, if you can get them both healthy, yeah, I think that's a different deal. So it's huge for K-State, in my opinion, to get Youngblood out on the field consistently in a sophomore campaign.
Yeah, they need him out there, and let's just throw in Phillip Brooks also in that mix too. So
yes, absolutely, you throw him in there. That's a great four receiver set: Phillip Brooks, Joaquin Gill, Knowles, and Youngblood, and they're all fast. You know, none of them are these just big bodied, slow receivers. All those guys can beat the corner off the line, and that scares defenses.
Youngblood, return kicks for touchdowns against he almost returned Texas on all of Texas teams, but he returned kick return against Texas, 100-yard kick return in down Lubbock at Texas Tech. And then, of course, Iowa State, he kicked off the Farmageddon rivalry with the kickoff return for a touchdown there, set the tone there. On overrated Iowa State, Matt Campbell. So we'll see moving forward how, I mean, I'm looking forward to see how Messingham uses Youngblood this year. I mean, he's going to be a vital part in that offense. So now, turn our attention now to the K-State football spotlight. And I want to talk about a guy that's been kind of involved with the whole injustice, the social injustice thing. And that is Harry Trotter, who actually came to K-State a couple years ago via transfer from Louisville. Sat out a little bit, and then he came a part of that rotation of backs last year, with included James Gilbert, Jordan Brown himself, Tyler Burns, Darcadia Wright, Joe Irvin. Harry Trotter last year, Alex, he finished fourth in rushing on a team, 263 yards, averaged 4 per pop. His longest run was 17 yards, and he got 3 touchdowns, most of them coming against KU. I was at that game last year. He was huge against KU there. Out in Lawrence last year, stepped up there, made a couple of touchdowns there. He kind of faded off a little bit down the stretch. Now he's going to be right there in the mix again with Dracadia Wright, Irving, and Tyler Burns. And there's another running back there named Deuce Vaughn that K-State signed. He's going to be in the mix this year, and maybe a couple others there that I don't know about. Again, I'm going to have to get warmed up there with coverage there of K-State running backs, along with the whole team, get kind of familiar with the team this year. So, Harry Trotter, your thoughts, Alex, on his impact from last year, and what do you think is going to happen with Harry this year?
Yeah, you know, I think that what we've learned with Chris Klieman, and I think we knew from anybody who followed him at North Dakota State, he likes the running back by committee. You know, that's right. What he likes to do. Now, I'm going to be honest, Eddie. I've sat back in the past and wondered what he would have done with Alex Barnes last year. I have definitely wondered that.
Oh, many, boy.
Many times. That thought has crossed my mind. I can't even tell you how many times, because I think Alex Barnes could have got 2,000 yards rushing under Chris Klieman in this system with all 5 of those senior offensive linemen. He might have had to veer away from his little running back by committee, because Alex Barnes would have just torn defenses up with the...
That's but, another conversation, yeah.
I know, it's another conversation. I've always wondered, I've always been like, oh my gosh, what would that be like? But, typically, Chris Klieman likes to do the running back by committee. He obviously did it last year, and I thought it worked well. You know, and honestly, it was with a group of running backs that he kind of patched together. You know, he found Jordan Brown, he found James Gilbert, you know, he kind of worked Harry Trotter in there, and, you know, even Tyler Burns has worked in there a little bit as well. And he made it work. As you mentioned, K-State was third in the Big 12 in rushing last year. Mm-hmm. I believe that's what you said. So,
yep.
You know, he did that with what I would consider kind of a patchwork running back by committee group, you know, with a couple of seniors in there. Now I think that you've got a group of backs coming in this year that are a little more of Chris Klieman's backs. And so I'm really eager to see what happens with that. And Harry Trotter is going to be a big part of that, because, look, he's the veteran in that room. I mean, he's one of the leaders in that running back room. So he's going to play a huge role. You know, we've talked about Joe Irvin, Darcadia Wright, and how talented those two guys are. Those two guys look like they could just be gems for K-State, just complete gems. Like, I look at, especially at Darcadia Wright, and I see the Alex Barnes in him, you know, with his size and his speed and the moves and what he can do. And you look at Joe Irvin and you look at the things that he can do, and you see, man, like, those players can be really good. But you got to remember, Eddie, that they're really young, too. And I believe that they both are redshirt freshmen. They played a little bit last year, but I believe they both did fall under the redshirt restrictions. I believe they both will still be redshirt freshmen.
Yes. Correct
if I'm wrong, but I think that's what it is.
That's right. That's correct. Yep.
Yeah. So, by the way, that's great for K-State. That means you can get possibly four years of both of them, which is a very scary thought for other teams. but Harry Trotter, he's going to be, you know, no, he doesn't have the natural ability and skill set that those guys do. But what he has is he's got the been there, done that. He can teach them the ropes. He can continue to teach them. I mean, they were on the team last year, but he can really continue to show them the ropes, lead by example. And I think that he'll be, I think he could be a really nice tool, especially in those high stakes situations. You know, K-State's trying to, they got the ball, you know, up four, less than 5 minutes left. You know, that seems like that could be a Harry Trotter type of, you know, drive. You know, get him in there, get somebody in there who can, you know, give us positive yardage, can run between the tackles, can be physical, can help us milk the clock. You know, I feel like he could really possibly thrive in those situations because he knows how to get the job done. You know, he knows how to, you know, come up in those situations. You look at obviously what he did against KU, and that was a great game for him. But I think that his experience in the running back room is going to be as important as anything. And I think you're going to see him out there, like I said, in a lot of those high leverage situations because, you know, I think Chris Klein trusts him. I think that's the biggest thing. Chris Klein trusts him, and I think he trusts the ball in his hands. So, you know, I don't know if we'll see him as much maybe later in the season as we might early on because if, you know, say Urban and Wright get going and they start blossoming and they start doing their thing and you just can't take them off the field because they're playing so well. You know, maybe that type of thing happens as the season goes on, but I definitely think you'll see a lot of Harry Trotter, especially early in the season. And I still, even if Urban and Wright do start to blossom, I really think Chris Kleiman's going to want to keep a three running back set. Mm-hmm. You know, I really think he's going to want, because what he likes to do is he wants his running backs always fresh. He always wants a fresh guy there. It's almost like hockey. When you're sitting in a new, you're doing a line change. I see a lot of kind of the similarities with how he rotates because on both sides of the ball, for that matter, because he wants everybody to stay fresh. You know, he doesn't want a running back taking 25, 35 carries a game. So Harry Trotter's going to get his touches, and he's going to make them count, and he's going to make the running match around him better. And you know what? Those players are so important. Players who can bring a spark, who can lead the team, who can bring those tangibles that I've talked about in the show in the past. That's one of the most important things that you can do on any sort of sports team. And Harry Trotter brings that. He brings the intangibles. You know, he busts his tail. The team respects him. He's a good teacher. And he's a good running back. He runs the ball well. And I think that you're going to see him put up some nice statistics this year. I think we're going to see him do some nice things in some high leverage situations. I think he's going to help in the development of the younger backs. And he's going to play an integral role. He's going to play an integral role. And you may not see it on the surface, but, you know, the season may end and you may be like, hey, he only had 350 yards rushing. Oh, hey, he only had 250 yards rushing and 100 yards receiving. But he will have had an impact much bigger than what the statistics show, in my opinion, because I think that any success that Joe Urban or Dracady Wright have will be in correlation to Harry Trotter helping them get that success. So I'm excited about this running back core, this running back group. I think that you have potential. I think this could be a really nice three-headed monster. And I think, look, Harry Trotter, he's going to be the leader of it.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Double A, Alex Aiden from San Diego, California, calling from San Diego. Eddie Greer right here in Manhattan. Case the Purple Project Podcast rolling on. And I don't want to open a can of worms on the whole Alex Barnes situation comparison there. I might have to say that for next week. But yeah, I mean, Harry Trotter, good back, hard worker. And you kind of point out some good things there. Yeah, obviously Chris Kleiman, Courtney Messingham, they kind of made a stable print coming in here. Like, hey, we're going to rotate our backs and keep them fresh, especially late in games. And Dracader, right, absolutely owned Iowa State. And we saw him early in the year, and then all of a sudden he disappeared. And then he reappeared at the right time against Iowa State and took them to school last year. That was just an amazing performance there. But yeah, I mean, that's a perfect example right there. And then the thought
of Jerkadian Wright, Joe Irvin for four more years for the will put nightmares in that Iowa State defense and all the rest of the defenses in the Big 12 there. So, yeah. And then if you guys are wondering if how, I mean, we don't know when football season is going to start, but the plan is to have immediate reaction following every football game. So whether, well, depending on whether it's fans or not, I mean, that's hasn't even been, we discussed this on this podcast, but the announcement hasn't been announced yet for K-State's concern anyway. So chances are might not be at the stadium, at least for the home game at least. But either way, though, immediate reaction following the games. So that could be at least two episodes a week. Still trying to figure that out. But I know for sure we're going to talk about every game after the fact and afterwards. Whether after dinner or not, we'll be here talking about the games. So that's the kind of the pre-plan, at least for the moment. So.
It'll be a good time, you know. We'll be able to discuss some football, and who knows what emotions we'll be feeling after so game day. So they'll get us nice and raw emotion after those games.
Oh yeah, looking forward to that. So, all right, K-State Nation, kind of wrap up the podcast this evening with again Chiefs news, my man Alex. So again, we talked Patrick Mahomes last week about keeping that full core together, right? Well, he's definitely excited to have his main boy back, or one of his main guys back on defense, Chris Jones. After a lot of back and forth discussions and a lot of debate, whether he's staying, he's going, he's staying, he's going. Chris Jones was a vital part of that defense for the last couple of years. Signed a four-year deal for the Chiefs, with the Chiefs, $85 million contract.
You know, Eddie, I didn't think he was going to be back. So, well, I thought he was going to be back on the pack. I mean, you know, I know that he threatened to not play earlier in the offseason. I figured he probably would. I figured it was probably a negotiating tactic at that point. Although Le'Veon Bell was trying to urge him not to play, and well, we know what he did. So, maybe, so I don't know. Maybe he wouldn't have played. I don't know. But It was a deal that I didn't think would get done, not because the Chiefs couldn't afford it. Brett Veach is, I talked about this last week, he's so good with managing these contracts and the money and making it work and being smart about it, and just a tremendous job in that. So I knew he could make the money work. And, you know, I knew the Chiefs wanted Chris Jones back, but the issue was Chris Jones. the issue really boils back to DeForest Buckner, who played for the 49ers last year. He got traded to the Colts, and the Colts signed him to a long-term deal that was a little above DeForest Buckner's value, which drove Chris Jones's value up. And once that deal was signed, I just thought, you know what? I think the Chiefs want him back, but I don't think that they're willing to pay him, you know, $24 million a year. I just don't think that they're going to pay that much money to Chris Jones. I thought the Chiefs wanted to pay him more, $17-18 million a year. So I thought in my mind, well, the only way this thing is going to happen is if these two sides compromise. And I don't know if the Chiefs are willing to compromise, but it sure didn't seem for the last year and a half like Chris Jones' side was willing to compromise. So, and then they weren't talking. And we got all the reports that the Chiefs hadn't been talking to Chris Jones for months upon months. And so I was just like, you know what, it's just not going to happen. And I don't think that I think the Chiefs have kind of put their feet down and said, you know what, look, we're not overpaying for you. And if you're, you know, if you're not willing to meet us in the middle, you know, play the season out of the franchise tag and we'll trade you next offseason. That was the direction I really thought this thing was heading. So I was very pleasantly surprised when I saw the contract or got the notification on my phone that he signed a four-year $85 million contract, and it turned out, Eddie, everybody did decide to meet in the middle. Chris Jones is going to be making $20 million a year. It was a four-year $8 million deal with $5 million in incentives on top of it, and that was obviously a good thing. It was a good thing to see that the Chris Jones camp kind of came off their number. The Chiefs camp kind of came off their number. They met in the middle, And the other thing about that contract is I talked about Mahomes' contract being actually very team-friendly for a $503 million contract. And so, you know, with Chris Jones' contract, I think it's pretty team-friendly, too, because the Chiefs aren't paying him any additional money this year. He's still making the same amount that he was going to make on the tap. And so, KC doesn't, it doesn't affect their cap this year in this COVID-19 crazy year when money is kind of up in the air. So I think that that was important. And then, you know, they will be able to kind of move in. And they can get out of the contract after 3 years as well. So that's another thing that benefits the Chiefs. So it's a really, and they didn't have to pay him a signing bonus going into this year. So it was a contract that actually worked out really well for the Chiefs, and Chris Jones got his money, and I'm glad that the team's met in the middle, and I'm really happy the deal got done, because I was explaining to somebody earlier in the week, I said, you know, you look at some players like a running back, you know, that's a position that, you know, you can replace. You can find somebody who can replace who you had, who can do a comparable job. And there are some positions in football that you could do that. There are some positions that you can't do that. Chris Jones does things that not very many defensive tackles can do, and it is hard to find defensive tackles who can do it. The Chiefs would have a difficult time finding a defensive tackle who could be so disruptive and who could get pressure on the quarterback from the middle of the line like Chris Jones could do. And it's just, it's such, he has such a unique skill set. I felt it was important to try to bring that back because there's not many players that can duplicate what he does. And in my opinion, I think it's more important than even getting pressure on the edge. I think it's very important to get pressure up the middle. I think that's the most effective way to get pressure on the quarterback.
Yep.
To be 100% honest, I think that the edge is a good way to do it. But when you're going up against a quarterback who gets rid of the ball in, you know, 2 seconds like Tom Brady, granted he's not in the AFC anymore, but when you do that, the best way to throw them off is to get pressure up the middle and knock them off their spot, just like right off the bat. So I think it's when you compare that with Frank Clark, who the Chiefs have on the end, you know, you got the pressure coming off the edge, you got that pressure coming up the middle, and then you've really got a rotation of the defensive ends on the other side. That's hard. That is difficult for quarterbacks. And I just didn't see any other way that they could duplicate that type of success on the defensive line. So great for him to come back. That's obviously huge for the Chiefs. He's only 26. And so you sign, you lock up your 24-year-old on the offensive side. You lock up probably your best defensive player. No disrespect to Tyrann Mathieu, who is an absolute beast on the back end. But I do think Chris Jones is probably their best defensive player. You lock him up long-term at 26. And that's a huge move for the Chiefs, and it's another tool in their tool belt, and kind of trying to create the dynasty that they keep talking about. Lewis Reddick said it. He said this week, he said Chiefs are going to be trouble the next 2 to 3 years because everybody's locked up. All their key players are going to be locked up through the next two and three years, and it's true. You know, they don't have any big free agents coming up this next offseason. They got 20 of the 22 starters back this season. And, you know, that's the whole of the AFC. I'm not saying that the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl this year, or I'm not saying they're not. But that's going to create some headaches for many, many NFL teams. And obviously, as a Chiefs fan, that makes me happy.
Chris Jones last year, 36 tackles total, 23 were solo. 9 sacks, again, a big vital part of that KC defense, and he's locked up for 4 more years with the Kansas City Chiefs. So,
and Eddie, I got to throw this stat in from the year before. He had 11 games in a row the year before where he got a sack. How many defensive linemen, not defensive ends, defensive tackles, get a sack 11 games in a row? Or it was 10 games. Maybe it was 10 games. But either way, it was 10 or 11. Whatever, Eddie. You get the point. That's crazy. you can't duplicate that type of skill set from a defensive tackle.
Yeah. Yeah, but main thing for Chiefs fans, they can breathe a sigh of relief. Chris Jones will be back. So there is that Chiefs news. And then real quick, before we sign off, of course, came across this earlier this week. There is going to be the media day for the Big 12 football in Dallas was postponed, was supposed to be scheduled for August 3rd. It was postponed. Now, I don't know the date that they're going to move it to. So, again, that's affecting, again, the conference for the Big 12, K-State. So, I want to throw that in there for we signing off. So, media day was supposed to be in Dallas August 3rd. That has been canceled. So,
yeah, and you know what? I've heard some conferences are doing media day virtual. So maybe the Big 12 ends up taking a page out of that. They end up doing a virtual Big 12 media day. Yeah. But I first think you need to come to an agreement on what your season's going to look like before you can have a media day. Because right now we don't have any answers.
We still don't know.
So I think we got to wait for the answers to come out. And then once the answers come out on kind of what the season's going to look like and how teams can proceed, then we can go to a media day. I can't see any scenario, Eddie, where they do it in person, though. You know, I think that if there's a season, you know, you'll have the media day, and I think it'll be virtual. And, you know, you'll go from there. But it'll still be a good event, you know, regardless, even if they do have it virtually later on. It's always great to hear from the coaches and hear from the players. be able to have all the media talk to everybody. You know, you have the Oklahoma reporters asking about K-State, being able to have K-State reporters talk to people from Texas. And, you know, that's always one of the unique things on media days. You get to have all the media from every team talk to any coach they want, any player they want. It really creates some interesting conversations, and you're able to get some really interesting perspectives on what some other coaches and players think of K-State, vice versa. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we can get it set in the future, virtually probably, and it's always an enjoyable event.
Yeah, so like everything else, go to a Zoom call, virtual, and do what you need to do. But yeah, you nailed it on the head. We still don't know about at least the season as it's concerned. We have discussed multiple times now in the Purple Project podcast. So again, there's going to be a lot of football talk coming up here on Triple P as it gets closer and closer to August with camps resuming. And we've already talked about Major League Baseball, Yankees and Mets. I was watching that before recording this podcast. So a lot of exciting stuff happening. And still, a lot of unknowns still yet to be figured out. But we'll when we know something, y'all will know, K-State Nation. So there is that. It's dinner time, baby Alex. Time to sign off for this podcast.
That's right, man. Time for me to fire up the grill and grill some burgers and, you know, do man stuff, Eddie. Right? Yep,
that's right, man stuff. Alex, appreciate you. We'll do it again next week, sir.
Sounds good, man. I look forward to it.
Folks, that's going to do it for another edition of Triple P, the Purple Project Podcast. Come to a close once again. Again, you can find this podcast wherever you get your podcast, whether it's from Spotify, Audioboom, Google Play, Radio.com, Apple Podcasts. You download it from there. Please leave us a 5-star. That will continue to spread the podcast out here in Manhattan, Kansas. If you're living here or you're an alum, wherever you're living at, please spread the word of the Purple Project Podcast. Add it to your collection of K-State podcasts. New content every week. And like I said earlier, just a few moments ago, football, if and when it does happen, we will have commentary of after every K-State game that it be played. So looking forward to that. But for right now, the Purple Project Podcast is signing out. Alex Aiden, my co-host, Eddie Greer III, saying thank you for listening to another edition of Triple P. And we will talk to you next time on Purple Project Podcast. And don't forget, here come them cats. We'll talk to you next time, everybody.
to the Purple Project Podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.